Okay, good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Transportation Committee to order. Today is Thursday, March 28, 2024. We are in room 124, the Barnes Committee Room, Alaska State Capitol. Let the record reflect that the time is 1:03 p.m. Today we have President Representative McKay, Representative McCabe, and Representative Sumner. Representative Mina. Representative Sumner, Vance, and Johnson are excused, and Representative Stutes as well. The staff that will be assisting us today are Linda Jensen with House Records, Susan Quigley with the LIO, and Angela Steppel, my committee aide. If everyone could silence their cell phones, today we have one item on the agenda, a presentation from the Department of Revenue, State of Alaska General Obligation Funds, and State Agency Debt. On behalf of the Department of Revenue, we have Deputy Commissioner Fadil Limani, and State Debt Manager Ryan Williams with us, and I think we're ready to begin. So if you guys would come up to the table and put your names on the record and begin your presentation.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Fadil Limani, Deputy Commissioner for Department of Revenue. With me today, I also have Ryan Williams, was our state debt manager. Before you for consideration, Mr. Chair, is the state's general obligation bonds as well as the state agency debt. What we're hopeful to do on this presentation is utilize this as a tool, as an education tool for the committee in going through the state's general obligation debt, the state's debt profile, in being able to address some of the questions that you may have. Looking at the presentation today, some of the topics that we anticipate in covering are the state's outstanding debt, the debt profile, state agencies' debt authorization, the general obligations bonds, the debt capacity, the policy that we have, and some of the prior debt authorizations as it pertains to the general obligations bonds. Looking at slide four, Mr. Chair, we've highlighted here the types of debt that the state has, the first one being the state debt, which is primarily the general obligation bonds, and also the revenue anticipated notes, which is a short-term borrowing, followed by the state guaranteed debt, the state supported debt, the unfunded actuarial accrued liability, also known as the UAAL, followed by the state-supported municipal debt eligible for reimbursement, and that's tied primarily to the school education reimbursement program. Then we also have the state moral obligation debt, the state and university revenue bonds or debt, state agency debt, the state agency collateralized and insured debt, and then followed by the municipal debt, which is the state does not necessarily have any obligation there. And so for the purposes of today's presentation and the interest of time, Mr. Chair, we're going to focus our attention primarily to the general obligation bonds and also the state moral obligation bonds as it pertains to the state agencies, but we're happily able to discuss any of these particular debt types with the committee. Looking at slide five, this pertains to the state moral obligation debt. This type of debt consists of bonds that are issued by the state agencies, which are secured in part by a reserve fund, to which it is tracked by a discretionary replenishment provision. Sometimes it's referred to as the capital reserve fund. And generally, the capital reserve fund is equal to the par amount of the annual debt service of the agency. And the state moral obligation debt is payable in the first instance by the revenues generated of the repayments by the respective project financing or the bond proceeds. So looking at the below of the agencies that have the ability to issue the state moral obligation debts are the Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation, which has not issued any debt, the Alaska Energy Authority, followed by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority, and then finally the Alaska Student Loan Corporation, which does not have any outstanding debt.
So can I ask you, Mr. Lamani, why the railroad's not on there?
We do have, since that one is a separate entity, we do have it in our matrix on page 6.
Okay, I'll wait. I mean, to me, it just seems like it's kind of in the same boat. It's a corporation that the state owns, so it's a state entity, and it should be able to return money to the state general fund, right? One would think, like HFC does, or ADA.
Ryan Williams, state debt manager, to the chair. So the Alaska Railroad is unable to issue state mall obligation debt. That's from their enabling legislation. And maybe to add to that, the only two agencies with currently outstanding mall obligation debt are the Alaska Bond Bank and the Alaska Energy Authority. In the past, the Student Loan Corporation has had outstanding revenue-backed loan notes that were had a moral obligation attached to them. And so I think the main purpose of this slide was just to show those agencies that are able to issue, but only certain agencies currently have outstanding state moral obligation debt.
Okay, thanks.
So moving to slide 6, Mr. Chair, what we've done here is we've tried to put a chart that's readily available to look at from the different agencies, the types of debt that can be issued, and some of their limitations. So looking at, for instance, the Alaska Energy Authority, the types of debt that could be issued there is direct general obligations of the authority. And with respect to the limitations, pledge revenues secured by the projects of the debt service. So in other words, whatever project that they're financing has to yield the revenues to be able to support the debt. Next one is the Alaska Housing Finance Corporations. There's various GO bonds and of AHFC, followed by revenue and other state guaranteed programs. Their statutory cap or annual issuance is $1.5 billion. And again, this includes the state guaranteed programs as well as various other financing structures that they have. And the last one on this page is the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. Similar to Alaska Energy Authority, they have various revenue projects or development projects in which they're pledging also general assets. And for this one, it requires legislation approval if it's anything greater than $25 million. Moving to page number 7, it's a continuation of the other agencies. We have the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority. This one has the types of GO bonds for the authority, which is an enhanced state moral obligation structure withstanding appropriation. The cap for the bond bank is $2.5 billion with specified purposes for max par amount outstanding. And then finally, we have the Alaska Railroad Corporation. Again, this is agency debt secured by revenues generated, not authorized to issue moral obligation bonds, as we have expressed earlier. And these are subject to an agreement with a third party to pay the debt service and other costs of the bonds. However, as it pertains to the Alaska Railroad Corporation, there doesn't always have to be necessarily an agreement. The agency could pledge other revenues or assets to be able to support the debt structure. Moving on to slide number 8 is the general obligation bonds. So when we think about questions that were being asked earlier, well, what are GO bonds? GO bonds are sort of the most common type of borrowing from local state governments. It's a tool to raise capital needs. The intent of general obligation bonds is to fund projects that may include parks, bridges, roads, schools, harbors, universities, and et cetera. General obligation bonds require authorization by law and needs to be ratified by the voters. Generally, it goes in front of the legislature for approval and then out to the voters by a ballot proposition at an election. General obligation bonds are backed by the full faith and credit of the state. And what that means is that the state pledges its full taxing authority to be able to meet its debt obligations. So to the extent that the state does not have sufficient revenue to meet those debt obligations, it has the ability to raise the taxes and other forms of revenue to be able to support those contractual arrangements. Geobonds are tax-exempt borrowing, which is means they're attractive to investors as they have certain tax incentives. It's the lowest cost of borrowing, and it's the most attractive to bondholders and investors.
So can we kind of go over how those work? The geobonds, you know, the state issues a bond. Somebody buys it and gives the state money, and they issue the bond after the voters have said, yes, you can do that, and we will be responsible as a state, all of us, for paying the investor back.
Is that certainly
sort of just kind of the
through the chair, Mr. Chair, yes, in high level, that's correct. So generally what happens is that if the authorization passed by the legislature, which has to have distinct projects and dollar amounts associated with those projects. And so once that is being approved by the voters, and then when those projects actually get financed, let's say, for instance, there was $100 million for a construction of a school. And for the purposes of, you know, a particular time, there's only a series of, let's say, $25 million that need to be issued in those bonds. So then that still goes to the State Bond Committee for approval and also defines the parameters of the financing. And so generally, which we'll get into some of the later slides, is then you'll end up going and having a pre-pricing that you're determining the parameters of the bonds if you're going to do a negotiated deal or with a direct underwriter. You're establishing the term sheet for the transaction, take into consideration what the market is doing at that point in time, and then be able to also get your rating agency meetings so that way they assess a credit to that particular transaction. So once all of that takes place and the bonds have been issued and the bondholders acquired those bonds, then those resources are provided to the state and that money is put into a separately managed account in the form of the bond proceeds, and those get utilized on an ongoing basis as those projects are funded.
Nice. Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. To the chair, in terms of the geo bond, is there any statutory requirement that the capital need that the geo bond is funding is a statewide need, or is that more to the discretion of the legislature?
Through the chair, Representative Mina, as long as it meets the definition of capital improvement, it doesn't matter if it's for a particular area. It could be in any one community. It could be a statewide basis, but so long as that it meets the definition of a capital improvement.
Thank you.
Okay.
Looking at slide 9, there's some additional requirements here that are laid out for the general obligation bonds. As we mentioned, we had some state examples of authorization legislation back in 2010 with HB 424 and then HB 286 in 2012. As I expressed, the State Bond Committee shall approve the sale of the bonds for each of the authorizations in the amounts of series at a time in which it finds for the best interest of the state at any point in time.
I have a question.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, are there other examples of authorizing legislation besides 2010 and 2012? In other words, how often has there been geo bonds put on the ballot in ratified since statehood?
Through the chair, Representative Mina, the last one that we've had is the 2012 authorization. Going back to statehood, sequentially in numbers, I'm not sure exactly how many times, but I think the dollar amount that's been issued over that time period has been in excess of $3 billion since statehood. Maybe Ryan may have some more information that I could share in terms of how many there's been legislation that's been introduced. The last one was a couple of years ago, but was never ratified.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Mina. Prior to the 2010 Act and the 2012 Transportation Bond Act, there were authorizations for general obligation bonds in 2009, in 2003 or 2004. For some of the historical information, the Department of Revenue produces the Alaska Public Debt Book. And so there should be a table that goes back through history to some of those prior time periods.
Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Mina, it's something that we'll look into and be able to provide that to the committee.
Okay.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Moving to slide 10, just a continuation on the project financing of the GEO bonds. Sometimes general obligation bonds could be utilized in conjunction with other source of revenues, whether it's grants or other programs that may include either a match. General obligation bonds could be utilized for that. As it pertains to the financing, there's a lot that goes into getting the bonds to market, where initially assembling of the financing team, which includes the bond council, the underwriting banks, the bond council, or relative to the disclosure, the financial advisors, or if it's at the municipal level, they're the municipal advisor. And then obviously you have the state representatives within the Department of Revenue that are carrying the financing orders. With respect to the state's policy as it pertains to the level debt service, we've assumed in the recent transactions that we've done a level debt service of 20 years, and we identified the method of sale, whether it's direct to the market or whether we're doing a competitive method. Also, as it pertains to the financing, there's certain refunding requirements within some of the bonds and the provisions contained in some of those bonds. So those are ongoing monitoring to making sure that we're doing an analysis to see if those would yield a cost savings to the state by way of the interest savings.
So how do you figure out, and we've talked before, but how do you figure out the length of time? So if you're going to issue a GEO bond for a project, let's say Susitna-Watonna Dam or the Rail Belt Energy, how do you figure out how long the service is for the bond and maybe even what the income we will get for the bond?
Certainly. Through the chair, I'll take a stab at that, and then I'll have Ryan add to that. So generally, the debt structure is usually based on the life of the asset. And so generally, there's terms that are defined either by the generally accepted accounting principles that determine certain fixed assets, the lifespan that they have. So sometimes the debt service is modeled and structured to encompass that cycle. But there's other things that go into consideration pertaining into the affordability of the agency that's issuing the debt, what the debt servicing would look like in any particular year. Sometimes you will have on the front end, especially if they're constructing a facility that they require a lot of capital, they'll do interest payments only until they start recouping the revenue and they're able to defer those payments down the line. So initially, you know, for the purposes of the GO bonds, we do at least 20-year, but there's nothing like particular that would prohibit from going longer if need be. It just depends on the asset.
Well, Ryan.
Mr. Lamani covered the topics that I had in mind, but you would have bond counsel look at the useful average life, as Mr. Lamani mentioned. And you mentioned hydro projects. So, like, the useful average life of a hydro project would be a lot longer than your typical school or road project, let's say. So, I mean, a hydro project could be maybe 40 years if it was determined that that would be okay, or longer. So it depends.
Right. So I was, you know, specifically, I was thinking the Susitna-Watonna. I've talked to some folks that said that could be a 6% return for 100 years, which would be a no-brainer for, say, a union retirement fund or something like that. You know, I mean, that's a pretty solid return all the way out. But I was thinking of the dam, rail, how long, I mean, rail's not going to, you know, not, that's 50 years probably, something like that. Same with the intertie. You know, wires aren't going to go away after 20 years. They would be a longer one. So those were the kind of things I was thinking of. Same roads. I mean, roads aren't going to go away either, right?
Right. Yeah. Through the chair, Mr. Chair, if I may, with the roads generally, just because there's replacement of the roads there, constantly and upkeep and maintenance that's done. Generally, those have a shorter span, but if you're building new roads, then generally the debt could be stretched out longer. But for some of these long life assets that you're talking about, you're looking at that useful life between 50 to 75 years. So ideally, you can stretch the debt accordingly, but it also is contingent upon the revenue that you're going to be receiving over that time frame.
Right.
And sometimes the issuer may elect to do a shorter time frame just because they feel like they're going to have enough coverage on their revenues so they can retire the debt early.
Right. Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, just on the financing team, how much of that financing team is under DOR versus legislature versus other entities? What's the breakdown?
Sure. So through the chair, Representative Mina, the financing team generally would include the commissioner's office within the Department of Revenue, the debt manager, and also the Department of Law, as they have to review the underlying resolutions that are for consideration. And then at that point in time, we also, because bonds are really specialized, we engage a third party bond counsel, followed by, depending on who we, which type of method we utilize for the bonds, we may sometimes do a syndicate of underwriters. So sometimes it could be a single underwriter, depending on the nature and the amount of the bonds that we're issuing. Sometimes it could be two or three or four. It just depends on the magnitude of the transaction. Then also there's the underwriters counsel, just in making sure that there's due diligence, disclosures, and other things that are being done to the market. And then generally there's municipal advisors as well that are on the transaction. And the role of the municipal advisor is that it helps guide the state team, if you will, on some of the areas that, you know, they may have an expertise. And if there's particular analysis that they're doing, you know, they're soliciting bids from a number of different underwriters, they're able to analyze the data and say, well, here's what we think that, you know, the state should move towards. So that's, in a nutshell, the financing.
May I follow up?
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, in terms of the financing team, and it says they're involved in the original issuance and the subsequent maintenance of debt. How long does that go on in terms of the maintenance of debt? And is there turnover with that financing team, or is it generally the same people that are involved?
through the chair, Representative Mina, great question. So what we try to do is try to maintain, obviously, stability, whether it's within the department or the financing team. Our financial advisor has been with the state for how long, Ryan? It's been a long, long time.
Six, seven years.
So generally what we try to do is have that level of continuity. But there's an extensive process that goes into monitoring of the bonds on the compliance after they're being issued. There's IRS, which Ryan is going to get into in the next slide as it pertains to the arbitrage calculation, making sure that you're not overly earning on the interest of the bonds. There's a continuing monitoring disclosures that are required as it pertains to the financial reporting on an annualized basis, coupled with if there's any material events that happen to where it could impact the state's financial abilities, if there's a rating change that takes place, those are some of the things that we constantly have to monitor. And of course, if there's an opportunity for a defeasance or a refunding, and we see a financial benefit to doing that, those are ongoing analysis and cash flow evaluations that we do annually at the very least.
Thank you.
Alrighty.
And once again, Ryan Williams, State Debt Manager. Continuing on slide 11, I'll go over a few of the items that need to be looked at after or post financing to maybe fold in a few additional comments to the prior commentary. The State Bond Committee hires bond counsel, municipal advisor to assist the committee through the issuance process. So I think that's just a comment on the broader financing team that has the policy makers that allow the issuance of bonds. And after you've issued bonds, you have to continually monitor arbitrage rebate. It's basically saying if you issue bonds and receive proceeds at a certain rate, you can't reinvest and earn more than that rate. If you do reinvest and earn more than that rate, then you owe a rebate payment to the U.S. Treasury. And the continuation of cash flow forecasting is very important. So let's say you had, you know, $400 million in bond authorization, and, you know, you're trying to figure out how to separate those issues, bond issues over time to meet those cash flow needs. It's very important because you wouldn't want to issue the entire authorization and then you're immediately paying interest on that debt. So you need to be cognizant of those identified projects and those cash flow needs. And then just some general review of bonds. Bonds typically have a 10-year par call, and so you cannot pay off the debt early if you have a 10-year par call. The only way to take that debt out would be to what's called a legal defeasance. So you'd have to have counsel opine that you funded an escrow sufficient enough to cover that debt service. So you are locked in for that 10-year period. There's also other special spending requirements. So certain bonds, you may be having to need to spend project or bond proceeds on that project within a limited amount of time. So it's typically 3 years. In some circumstances, you can spend down those funds within 5 years. And then continuing disclosure is a very large item, especially these days. The Securities and Exchange Commission has the Rule 15C212, which is the state is, as an obligated party, has to post annual disclosures as they've agreed to in each bond issuance. So typically this would include the annual comprehensive financial report, the Alaska Public Debt Book, And also, I do post the fall revenue sources book and forecast to related outstanding bond CUSIPs. On slide 12, we'll go over a summary of some of the main state debt items. So number one would be general obligation bonds. As of June 30, there was $577.2 million outstanding with total debt service to maturity of about $776 million. General fund commitments to debt also include subject to appropriation related debt. So certificates of participation are outstanding, issued in 2014, and lease revenue bonds associated with the Goose Creek Correctional Facility and a parking garage in Anchorage. So there's about $164 million outstanding and about $205.6 million in debt service to maturity. The GO bonds, final year of maturity is 2041. The subject to appropriation debt is 2033. We've represented those in a chart here in the bottom right-hand corner. So you can see both principal and interest payments to maturity. Also, the state has a very modest amount of general obligation debt outstanding. The pay down of that principal is about 77% over a 10-year period. So it's a mature program, as you would call it.
And just to add for that, if I may,
sure.
Mr. Chair, just looking at within that 10-year time frame, it's about 80%, but then looking at it within the 15%, nearly 98% of those bonds are fully paid off.
And on slide 13, this is an excerpt from the Alaska Public Debt Book. It goes over those outstanding state and state agency debt by type. So I covered general obligation bonds with about $577.2 million outstanding. There is state guaranteed debt outstanding that it has the full faith and credit authority of the state. That is the Veterans Mortgage Program collateralized bonds through the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. That's the only debt of the state of Alaska that would be considered double barrel bonds because they're first backed by those mortgages that as revenue to the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. But if that were in any way insufficient, the state would be obligated to step in and pay principal and interest on that debt. State-supported debt, I also covered those with the COPs, certificates of participation, and Goose Creek and a parking garage. There's also a state-supported municipal debt, and so a majority of that is through the school debt reimbursement program. There is about $433.6 million outstanding, and the state reimbursement of capital projects has about $17 million in debt service to maturity. And then also, the UAAL, or unfunded actuarially accrued liability of the state combined, all trust is $3.5 billion, and that's based on the fiscal year 22 actuarial valuation report. And I won't go over each one of these by line item, but I'm happy to jump in and discuss.
Okay.
I'm sorry. If we can go on slide 14,
okay.
I do also want to cover. Sorry, slides 13. I'm sorry. The Alaska International Airport System does have revenue bonds outstanding. They're an enterprise of the state of Alaska. They have $237.7 million outstanding as of June 30th. So I just wanted to cover the revenue bonds of the state as well. On slide 15, another annual report that the Department of Revenue releases is the debt affordability analysis that discusses the credit ratings of the state, the debt levels, the debt as a percentage of unrestricted general fund revenue. It also outlines currently authorized but unissued debt. There is no currently authorized general obligation bonding authority that is unissued from the 2012 Transportation Act. And then it has a few parameters for the issuance of debt through policy. Some of those policy items include, like, when you issue debt, the state typically issues debt 20 years, a 20-year term with level debt service payments. There are certain parameters on refunding bonds. You would want to achieve a certain percent of savings. And in that analysis, the Department of Revenue determined that the state had a debt capacity of about $1.4 billion. And that is derived by looking at those percentages of directly paid state debt compared to unrestricted general fund revenue. On slide 16, we've presented a few items related to the 2010 Act for that prior authorization. This was a piece. This is just a tombstone from the 2010 issuance, and that was the first part of issuing for that authorization. The total authorization was for $397.2 million. And on the following page, it gives a lot more detail on the defined project list and amounts for those projects. And so I have the University of Alaska Arena, Life Sciences Center, that's the theater in Matsu, and several school projects. For the 2012 Transportation Bond Act, we've just kind of outlined some of those main parameters as well. That Bond Act authorized the issuance of approximately $453.5 million. And on slide 19 is a bit more robust project list. So you have several projects through the Department of Commerce and several road and transportation projects through the Department of Transportation.
I don't see Point McKenzie Rail Extension on there anywhere. I made Fadil smile. So that kind of brings up a point. What if we wanted to bond for that entire $247 million that the railroad says it's going to cost us to do 32 miles of track? How would we, just kind of in general layman's terms, how would we go about doing that if we just wanted to do a geo bond for that amount of track?
There it is right here, Port McKenzie Rail Extension. Sorry.
No. Did I miss it?
Yeah, it's about halfway down on the top. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Sorry. Port McKenzie Rail Extension, $30 million. Right?
There you go.
All right. Yeah.
Well, there we go. Right? Okay, I'll shut up now.
No, that's okay. Or maybe that's just fake. Just for this presentation.
That looks real.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, Matsu. Okay. Cool.
Yeah, so through the chair, to address your question that you had as to how we go about, it's no different than obviously the $30 million that was put in while back in 2012. We certainly look at the parameters of the, obviously there has to be enacting legislation first to allow us to move forward, have it out to the voters. Once that's ratified, then we would be able to assemble the financing structure and being able to look at what debt service would look like.
Okay, so we would have to do first off is the legislation, and then it has to go before the voters, so it has to go onto the ballot and get ratified by the voters, right? And
yes.
Then once that's done, and as that's going through, you guys are putting together all the people that are going to buy the bonds and provide the money and provide the project and the life of the project. All that stuff kind of mixes together to create this package for the rail, right?
Through the chair, yes. So ideally, you know, as far as putting the financing structure, that doesn't take that long on the GO bond. Those generally tend to be pretty straightforward. The majority of the timing that takes is the legislative efforts. So once the financing structure is put in place, you're looking at very tight turnaround. It could be up to a couple of months from the time that you get the authorization. And sometimes the debt is done incrementally. So when you reference the $257 million, you may do a $50 million and then another $100 million. So each time you have to go on those increments and do financing for each of those bond series. And if you did it all at once, you know, just determining what that's going to look like from a financial standpoint. The other part to that is if it's going to generate revenues and to the extent that the agency wanted to pledge those revenues in being able to pay for that debt, ultimately that becomes in some ways like a double barrel bond, which means you pledge the revenues first and then you have the state as the backstop in the pledge.
So in by double barrel, you mean revenue and GO bond. Both revenue and GO general obligation bond, right?
Through the chair, they're still tax exempt. So they're considered more of a GO bond, but it has the ability to pledge the revenues on the front end.
Huh. Okay. So let me ask you another question. The other day we put through a amendment to the railroad bond bill that authorized from the legislature $300 million in bonding authority. Is that the legislation that you're talking about? I mean, when you say, like, for the rail extension, we said you'd have to have legislation. Well, we just passed an amendment to a bill. That's the sort of legislation, right?
Ada,
through the chair, I think we may be talking about two different things.
Okay.
I think you were referencing to the increasing the cap as it pertains to their statutory ability to issue debt for the $300 million. I think that's what you're referencing to. As far as going on to the GO bond, you actually have to go out to the voters.
So GO bond goes out to the voters through legislation, and it has a specific project attached to it, right?
Correct.
Okay. And the ADA is sort of a different deal, and the railroad is a different deal. We issue them bonding authority, their cap, essentially, mm-hmm. and then they can, if they need it, they can go out for the money for the projects through that particular authority, if you will.
Through the chair, that's correct, because essentially it's a particular project that they're financing that's going to generate the cash flow in being able to support that debt.
Okay, so two separate, wildly separate deals, if you will, or tranches, or okay, cool.
Oh, I have a question.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair McCabe. Through the chair, going back to talking about the 2012 GO bond, you know, I'm less familiar with GO bonds, so this presentation is really helpful. I'm wondering what determines capital projects like the big project in the 2012 GO bond to be in that GO bond rather than the normal process of, you know, having a project highlighted in the capital budget. Could you walk me through some of the context around that 2012 GO bond?
Through the chair, Representative Mina, I don't have that historical perspective as to what went through determining the projects for the 2012 authorization. We can speak to, at a high level, the process as to how that works in being able to determine which projects, but specifically as to, you know, why the Port of Anchorage expansion versus another project, you know, that was debated through the legislative process, where annually you have the CAPSIS system to where folks will fill in those forms and those requests, and then it's being deliberated at the legislative level to come up with that final list of projects. And then that's what gets out to the voters for approval. And so once that's approved, that's what ends up being funded.
Thank you. May I follow up?
Of course.
Thank you, Chair McKay. Through the chair, I understand part of the mechanics about the process for the GO bond. I'm more curious about what factors lead these projects to be a part of a GO bond rather than normal capital, than the normal capital budget. And maybe that might not be the best question for revenue. Maybe I should talk to legislators at the FAST in around 2012. But I know there's been some conversation in Anchorage related to the Don Young Port of Alaska, potentially geobonding that. I know the chair has interest in geobonding potentially with Port McKenzie. And so since geobonds don't happen all of the time, I guess maybe another way to ask the question is, what are circumstances where a project might make more sense in a geobond rather than just in the capital budget?
Through the chair, Representative Mina, I mean, there's a lot of different factors that go into making the determination. And again, that's the duty of the legislature to be able to determine what makes the most sense on utilizing the capital resources or, you know, bond proceeds to be able to do that. Obviously, with the capital appropriation, it's an annual appropriation. On the bond proceeds, you have a life cycle in terms of by the time that it gets out to the voters. So there's just a number of different things that go into that process. And, you know, the legislature certainly has the discretion and ability to determine what path to move forward.
Thank you.
Thanks. So I think you have one last slide in here.
Cover that one.
Are those let's go back to that real quick, because I'm interested in one particular project on the very bottom of that slide. What happens when there's a project that doesn't get completed? So there's no revenue coming in. The voters in the state are still responsible for paying that off. I mean, we've done that a whole bunch, right? With all these grain silos, canneries in Anchorage, and now it looks like Catlin Road as well.
Through the chair, as far as the debt, we still have an obligation to make debt service payments. As far as the completion of the project, obviously that becomes a legislative item to be addressed and put in either on a capital budget request or future bond deal.
Okay. I can add to that.
Mr. Williams.
So if you do have an authorization to issue, and then you have a series resolution through the State Bond Committee to issue a piece of that total authorization, you would only do that if you had a cash flow schedule or the immediate need to issue those bonds. But if you have not issued the bonds, you know, you wouldn't be forced to go issue the bonds to cover that project that may not have been funded yet.
Right.
So there's some flexibility tied into that as well.
Right. Cool. All right, gentlemen, thanks. I appreciate it. No other questions? Okay. Anyone have any closing comments or discussion amongst the three of us? Okay, our next meeting is Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024, when we'll hear from DOT Commissioner Ryan Anderson and his team, who will update us on the STIP. Seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect that the time is 1:54 p.m.